Thanks for spending time with us on the Green this week. I'm Tom Byrne. In this edition of Enlighten Me, we head to the University of Delaware to highlight work from student journalists there. Pieces produced by UD Communications students for a class taught by Nancy Karabjanian, a longtime First Aid journalist, director of UD's journalism program, and one of the founders of Delaware Public Media. Up first, we delve into the world of sports. Last weekend, UFC, the biggest promotion in mixed martial arts, or MMA, brought a card of fights to the White House lawn. But you can also find MMA action locally, far from the UFC spotlight. Recent University of Delaware grad Andrew Fuska gives us a glimpse at what MMA looks like closer to home.
MMA and other martial arts are rising rapidly, with some of the biggest fights garnering millions of views and millions of dollars.
I was actually the first professional fighter in Delaware for MMA and Muay Thai.
That's Delaware's Bazooka Joe Stripling, a martial artist who spent 3 decades calling the cage home.
Back in the day, there was no Rick. We ruled my first professional MMA fight was in a ring, and now they're all in cages.
How long did you train before taking your first fight?
2 weeks. 2 weeks, but I also wrestled my entire life. I had done karate my entire life. We fought in an underground tournament, and I'm winning the tournament, and then I went to a jiu-jitsu school, and 2 weeks later, I fought an actual real MMA fight.
Stripling has over 20 professional bouts under his belt, and after many years of fighting, he opened his own gym in Newark. The gym sits above the Patriot Ice Center and celebrated its 10-year anniversary in April.
On the gym, so it's probably 60 to 80 hours a week just on the gym side, like being here every day. And then I also work a full-time day job at a high school where I'm a security and hospitality ambassador for the school. And I have a 14-year-old son who plays every sport possible known to man, and chess.
Owning the gym is hard work, but for Joe, the reward is greater than the sacrifice.
I also think there's people who are put on this planet to do certain things. And I think I was put on this planet to teach, no matter what martial art or history. Like, I wanted to be a history teacher growing up. The money is not important to me. It's about keeping people wanting to be here and learning in martial art.
It's like the best thing. It saved my life. Everybody says, oh, Muay Thai saved my life. It really did.
Joe's passion for martial arts is easy to see, and he loves to pass that down. That was his student, Devin Lucerna, who after years of training under him, now coaches alongside Joe at the gym. Never at a loss for words, Joe and Devin exchanged stories and experiences from inside the ring.
When I got into the ring and I got hit, it was like, it's like when you first fall on a snowboard. You're like, huh, that was fun. Let me get back up and try this again. You want to get hit sometimes, so you can kind of just like turn on your brain and the adrenaline starts rushing.
Stepping foot in the ring, you have to be crazy. You have to be willing to die. And some people don't understand that. And like, that nervousness for me is like, hey, they need to be willing to die. And if they're not, I need to be ready to throw in a towel to protect them.
No matter how big the sport gets, hardworking pioneers like Bazooka Joe will forever be the lifeblood of it.
I'm never kind of sitting still. And if I am, like I am right now, it's like super awesome.
UD News, I'm Andrew Fuska.
Thanks, Andrew, for your reporting. Our next piece introduces us to a somewhat unusual set of University of Delaware students, women who are both members of a sorority on campus and ROTC cadets. Recent UD grad Jade Cregan reports.
While the sun isn't even up and most of campus is still fast asleep, for those who balance ROTC and life in a sorority, it's go time. Senior Andrea Pyle mixes these two passions and identities to create a well-rounded college experience. At merely 5'3" tall and a self-declared girly girl in the sorority Chi Omega, this may confuse others, but not Andrea.
It's really funny because like so many people will like look at me when I'm out of uniform and be like, oh my god, you do ROTC?
Preserving that girly girl attitude and feminine persona when not wearing her combat boots requires a few rituals.
When I can have my nails done, I have them done. Like, if I can dress up when I'm not in uniform, I do, because that's just like, I make the most out of the time that I don't have to be in uniform.
Andrea isn't the only sorority girl in an ROTC uniform.
I like to dress up for class when I can, so I feel like it's a good balance. And honestly, sometimes it's fun to not have to pick what I'm wearing to work out every day.
That was junior Kathleen Zemrowski, an ROTC cadet who is also in Chi Omega and serves as their social chair. For her, the chance to focus on Kathleen the woman over Kathleen the soldier is a great way to get that feminine fix.
my personality a lot, like, can shine through what I'm wearing. And then certain opportunities for, like, events, like we do a military ball. I don't wear a lot of pink, but this year I'm wearing a pink dress.
Despite their seemingly unusual mix of extracurriculars, Andrea and Kathleen both said they have never felt iced out by the other ROTC cadets. If anything, their biggest worry was not understanding the jargon used in training.
The first day, like, I was talking to somebody and they were like, oh yeah, when we have a ruck. And I was like, what's a ruck? And I felt so stupid asking that. And they were like, well, it's this thing where we put like 35 pounds in a bag and we put it on our, it's like a backpack, and we just walk for miles. And we do 6 miles, 8 miles, and 12 miles.
ROTC Captain Wendy Dill said that it is not uncommon for women in ROTC to also be in sororities.
There's no benefit or not benefit if you're in a sorority. So it doesn't help you, but it doesn't hurt you either. And we know that cadets are college kids, so we want them to have that full college experience where they're getting to go to class and they get to be in sororities and do all those things, but then also they're learning how to be a leader in the Army.
She also said that there are still several misconceptions when it comes to women in ROTC.
We do have a very significant amount of females, so I think that's like a misconception, is like the ROTC is a man's world, and it's really not.
Whether it's hiking 12 miles in uniform with a 35-pound pack or planning sorority events, Andrea and Kathleen are proof that sorority life and ROTC cadetship can coexist.
Like Kathleen and I, we have each other, which helps a lot.
For UD News, I'm Jade Cregan.
Thanks, Jade, for your piece. And we close with University of Delaware rising senior Shelby Murphy, who explores how college students are joining the trend to seek out the pops and hisses that come with returning to vinyl records as a way to listen to music.
We live in an era of infinite playlists and on-demand culture. The way we listen to music has become frictionless. But for UD student Joey Barnyai, the appeal lies in a little more resistance.
I would definitely say, like, listening to vinyls, like, it's more of a experience or more of like a production. It's a lot, it's completely analog, or mostly analog, so there's a lot more setting things up. Like, it's more of a production. It's not just click a button.
That production is a tangible connection. For student collectors like Aiden Mallett-Prevot, the appeal isn't just the music. It's the physical history printed on the back of a 12-inch cardboard sleeve.
Yeah, I mean, it's much more tactile, and you pick out what you're looking at. You see the album art. You can look at the credits and everything, and it's not something you can really do with a Spotify song. I think there's a feature now on Spotify and maybe YouTube where you can look at the credits for the song, but it's very minimal. But like here you can see everyone who's singing, all the musicians in this band, everyone's produced it, everyone was involved in the album in the back.
But why go through the work? Why pay $30 for a disc that pops and hisses when you can stream a perfect version for free? Philip Gentry, a musicologist at the University of Delaware, says we are living through a connoisseurship crisis.
Streaming disrupts all of that. It makes it very hard to be a connoisseur in a certain way, because you can sort of listen to anything all the time, and so you don't have to like make choices. But I do also see students that are trying to sort of push back against that streaming culture and almost mimicking the practices, not even of their parents necessarily, but of their grandparents.
For Joey, that connection to the past is literal. His collection isn't just a hobby, it's a family archive that bridges the gap between the digital age and the late 1960s.
My grandmother gave me a bunch of her old records that I listened to, which is pretty cool. Like a lot of like older jazz, like maybe late 60s, early 70s maybe. Like the old school element, definitely like thinking about like this is like what people did before the internet, you know. That's kind of fun about it.
Professor Gentry notes that while the industry tries to monetize this trend, the real value is in the intentionality it forces upon the listener. In an era of AI and robotic perfection, the skips and scratches make the music feel human again.
that having to like listen carefully and closely to music is a skill you have to learn. But I'm really glad that there is a little bit of a sort of fad, even if it's just a fad, for that kind of like careful, attentive listening.
While digital files are technically permanent, there's a newfound value in an object that can skip, scratch, and eventually wear out. Shelby Murphy, UD News.
Thanks to UD rising senior Shelby Murphy and recent UD grads Jade Cregan and Andrew Fuska for enlightening us this week